Bandwidth for this podcast is brought to you by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com. This is the iOS Show, episode 342, recorded on September 30th, 2017. Enjoy! All right, it's time for the iOS Show, where we cover all things iOS and beyond. I'm Michael Johnston, and with me is Adam Christensen from the MacCast. Hey, Adam, how are you doing?
I'm doing all right. It's Saturday.
It is Saturday.
Yeah.
It's a wonderful, wonderful Saturday. Jeff Gamet is also here from the Mac Observer. Hey, Jeff, how are you doing?
I'm doing all right.
Great.
And it's nice to hear your voice.
Yeah, I got... This was maybe going to be my pick. Maybe the app will be my pick. So I got a new toy. Actually, it's not even a toy. I'm not even going to call this thing a toy.
It's educational tool.
It's exceptionally productive. And so it changed. So I got an iPad Pro. I got
what size?
10.5.
Cool.
And the right size?
Yeah. You maniacs kept suggesting that I get the 256, and I think it's impractical for me.
Oh, the storage. Yeah. I think you're insane to get the 64, but that's cool.
No, did you not? Okay, so I sent these fools.
I saw the screenshot.
I sent these fools a screenshot of how much
you're going to want to use it more and more. You're going to find more cool apps to install. And I know you didn't use as much on your old iPad, but the Pro is so much more capable.
So
you're going to hit the ceiling.
I moved all the stuff from my Air 2 over, where basically I was using 19.5 gigs. And the largest app used was Messages, and then GarageBand, which I never use, and then Photos, which I don't care about. And so I don't anticipate using any more, because a week of notes was 4 megs. So I'm probably going
to need to use bigger words.
You might be right about that.
HEIC and HEVC is going to help a lot of people out a lot too, though.
Yeah, I think 64 is going to be okay for me, especially given... So number one fun fact is Best Buy has $100 off, I think, almost all the iPads Pro.
Wow.
I don't know how long that's lasting. It might have been going on since Labor Day. I can't really
track. They started a sale and just forgot to end it.
Yeah. But this thing is awesome. It made me realize that paper is... super stupid, and this thing is better than paper. It just, like, I don't know, for unless you're a student, I don't know that you understand the like little tinge of stress that you get as you sit down to take notes, and you're like, I don't know how to arrange these notes because I'm not sure how this subject is going to round out, and the best way to arrange notes, I'm not really sure, because the professor may not always present things in the most logical way that you want to have it. So the ability to like lasso a bunch of stuff and then move it around, that changes my world.
When did you buy this?
I got it Tuesday, I think.
What day was that?
What day was that? It was Tuesday. What
the 26th?
The 19th. Wait, no, the 26th. Yeah.
So September 26th.
I was just curious why you didn't go for the free Beats headphones.
Because I.
Because you missed it by a day.
Save $100. Wait, at Best Buy?
No, at Apple for any their back to school promo was. If you bought a 10.5 or a 12.9 iPad or a new MacBook, you got free Beats Solo 3 wireless headphones.
Yeah, that's useless to me.
Yeah, but I mean, you could turn around and sold them. I mean, they're worth $330.
Are they, though? Really?
That's what they, yeah, that's what they retail for.
Well, you should have told me.
But it ended. That's why I was asking you. The promo ended on September 25th.
I would not have put that together fast enough. Yeah, okay, so here's my tip, and then we'll talk about some other stuff. So I got it knowing, like, okay, I know that I'm confident in this purchase because I know that the palm rejection situation is literally perfect on the iPad Pro. Like, I'm not going to have any issue at all writing with the Apple Pencil. And so I start doing stuff, and it just, it freaks out on me every 20 seconds. I get a weird, like, I write down, like, I put down my pencil, and I write out some, you know, single stroke. And then
and you get some crazy line shooting off at a funky angle, and you're like, what the hell?
I never got the funky angle, but I would lift up my pencil, and then the stuff would disappear. What I had just written disappeared. Have you ever seen that?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And so you probably know the solution to that.
Michael, what's the solution to that? I would love to know how to fix this problem.
You were welcome to say it. It's I had Zoom on in accessibility, which I do use. I use Zoom from time to time. But so if you have Zoom on, it seems like a bug. I think this might just be a bug.
It's totally a bug.
It's a weird, weird bug. I wonder if it's in iOS 11. I only tried it in 10. But yeah, so as soon as I turned that off, it was perfection. It was as perfect as I wanted it. So I would highly recommend, if you're a person who takes handwritten notes and you're thinking about maybe the iPad Pro being cool, it's, oh man, I got rid of paper. Like I bought this thing, and then that night I went behind my house and like burned all paper in a garbage can and swore it off forever.
You know, I never had the opportunity to use something like this for school, and I would love to, but
it's freaking game changing.
Yeah. I mean, when I'm at conferences, where I'm taking a class at the conference as opposed to speaking, I don't want paper. I have my iPad and I have an Apple Pencil, and I just go to town with all my notes, and it's awesome.
Yeah. Yep.
So okay. Good for you.
I'm the same way. And I have to correct myself. So apparently you don't get Beats wireless headphones. You get the Beats X headphones, which are only $150 on the Apple promo. So
yeah, and then I would only get $100 maybe if I was lucky.
Yep. And they'd talk you down to 80, and then you'd be like, I just lost $20.
Those are still nice headphones, because if you wanted something like that, because they have the W1 chip.
Yeah, but they're too bass heavy. Sounds too, yep, too muddy.
Yeah, okay. So, I don't know why I arranged my show topics this way. Apple released iOS 11.
Woo!
With, you know, you got...
with extra battery sucking technology.
Does it?
Holy crap!
Okay, so I've been getting messages from friends like, hey, how do you like the new thing? And I'm like, I didn't update. I'm not crazy. I've been waiting. So I updated on my iPad, because iPad obviously is like loaded with new features, and I just wanted to get on that. I couldn't help myself. And so far the battery life seems okay.
iPads have been fine. It's not an iPad issue with the battery, as far as I know.
Okay,
it's an iPhone problem.
You know, the crazy thing for me with the crappy iPhone battery life is that it was much better during the betas than it is in the...
That's what I've heard. I've heard that.
Yeah, the same thing for me. Yes, absolutely. Yeah, I don't know what they did. It's really weird.
Yeah,
I can't get through a day without recharging my iPhone now.
Hmm. Yep. I'm in the same boat, and I probably could get through a day, but like if I don't put it on the charger, because I didn't think I had the problem at first, and what I realized was that it wasn't that I didn't have the problem; it's that my daily normal habits for using my phone, I'm almost always near a charger because I work at home, so I pick up my phone off the charger, I walk around the house getting lunch or whatever, and when I come back to my office, I drop it back on the charger. Or if I have to go out somewhere, I have a charger in my car, so I'm taking it off the charger. And you know, so I'm like constantly just not consciously, I'm just constantly plugging it in, right? Because it's just how I have been sort of trained myself.
Sounds kind
so
of
I had to,
maniacal.
when I started getting emails from tons of people, I mean a lot of people were emailing me saying something's happened in iOS 11, my battery life has gone completely out the window, I went, okay, I'm not thinking I'm experiencing it, but maybe there's something here. So I made a conscious effort the next day to not plug in my phone, and I even messed up about midday. I picked it up and I realized I dropped it on the charger for like a minute or two. I'm like, whoops, I'm not supposed to do that.
But that's crazy talk.
If I left it off, if I left it off the charger for a whole day, just with normal usage, I didn't adjust my usage pattern, which is usually I probably do a couple phone calls, a little looking up emails, a little Twitter, you know, not at all heavy usage. By the end of the day, I was, you know, nearing red line. And that's not normal. I mean, most of the time I would get to the end of the day and I would be at 60%, maybe 50%.
Yeah.
So it's like a 2x. It's like draining about twice as fast, as near as I can tell.
Wow.
Yeah. And Adam, I'm in.
Yeah, either 33 to 50% faster.
Yeah. And I found it pretty funny that when you first asked about this, mm-hmm. I immediately said, oh, I don't have this problem. And it turns out I was doing exactly the same thing you do, excuse me, where I'm charging it unconsciously.
Mm-hmm.
So when I made a point to not do that, yeah, I couldn't get through the day.
I never do that. That's craziness. Most people don't do that. Well, that sucks. Did they fix it in 01?
No, it's not fixed in 01. I'm holding hope that it's tweaked in 0.1.
Anecdotally, I'll say it seems a little better, but it's not fixed well enough to make you happy.
Oh, are you in the beta?
Or me happy. Yeah, yeah, so I run the 0.1 developer beta.
Yeah, they put out the public beta yesterday or something like that. Very recently, yeah?
Yeah, Thursday or Friday. I can't remember which.
So that's cool. I don't do that. Don't do that. Just wait. I think it's good advice to wait until the 0.1 release. If you really don't, if you can hold off, if you have a little bit of like self-restraint, just wait, because it only takes a week or two.
Normally I would have been with you, but I mean, like Jeff was saying, the betas were rock solid. It's just really weird. You know, it's almost feels like that kind of thing where, you remember past releases, they had one, I think, where they forgot to turn off like the debugging code. And so like everybody's phone in production release was like running debugging code in the background and it just was killing batteries.
Mm.
It feels like that, but I don't think that's what's going on.
This release is really odd, honestly, because there's a lot of stuff that was not turned on that we expected.
Yeah.
So number one, the 3D touch app switch gesture is not in there right now. And that's something we had in 10.
Mm-hmm.
Craig Federighi.
Listener gave me a little workaround for that.
Interesting. Well, Craig Federighi was emailed. Someone asked about why that's not in 11. And he said that there was an issue. There was some kind of conflict where they had to remove that gesture for now, but they are planning to bring it back in a 0.x update.
Mm-hmm.
Is that in the beta, Jeff?
Oh, let's see if it's an 11.1. I'm going to go with no.
Okay.
Yeah, and like I said, I have a potential. If people are really bummed by that, I have a potential. It's not great, but it's an okay workaround.
Okay.
You can use, do you guys know about the assistive touch button?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, the little
white button that you can bring up. So if you go into your accessibility settings, there is a thing called assistive touch.
Yeah.
Which puts a little white, sort of macro button on your screen that you can move around the screen.
Yeah. That's the thing that people turn on when they break their screen.
Or break their home button or whatever it might be. But one of the features of it is you can set a 3D touch action. So when you force press on that assistive touch button, you can trigger an action. And one of those actions you can trigger is the app switcher.
That's not terrible. I thought it was going to be like worse than that.
No, and plus you can move it right to the center middle of the left-hand edge of the screen.
Right.
And so you basically have, you know, the only bummer is you have to have the little white button floating there, but it ends up being almost the same gesture. So yeah, it's not terrible. It's a total hack around, but if that was like a killer feature for you that you used all the time, it can maybe get you through until Apple pushes it back out.
Cool. Well, that's It's a nice little hack. I'm going to stick with...
I never use that gesture, so...
I use it constantly. I use it constantly. Let's see here. This is interesting. So, as it turns out, so you got the new awesome control center in 11.
Do you like the new control center?
I do. Yeah, I mean, I haven't used it on my
I'm disappointed iPhone. At the same time.
I haven't used it on my iPhone, obviously, because I haven't updated, but I use it on my iPad, and I really dig it.
I don't like that there's certain controls that are harder to surface now. Like, they're buried deeper.
Such as? Like what?
Connecting to my AirPods. It's a big one for me.
It's, how is it harder?
In the past, it was just right there on the little player. Now you've got to like pull it up, and you've got to force press or whatever on the little player thing, and then it comes up, and then you don't have to tap it.
No,
deeper.
Okay, so on 10, you have to swipe up, then you have to press the little audio destination thingy.
AirPlay picker.
And then, yeah, you press the AirPlay picker, and then you press your AirPods.
Right.
On 11, you swipe up to your control center, you press the little AirPlay picker, and then you press your AirPods. How is that different?
I just don't like it.
You know what I'm talking about, right? There's
yeah,
the little lines.
I get ultimately what you're talking about, but to me, it just feels like it's buried down there.
For the sake of people who don't know, there are on the upper right-hand corner of your now playing widget or control thingy, you just press...
File.
Thank you. You press the little wavy lines.
Right.
And that'll bring up the audio destination picker.
Disabling night shift mode is buried deeper.
That's true. Not a huge deal. I think that's fine.
I don't know. It's just...
I don't know. Like
it's cluttery.
That,
I like that you can customize it, but I don't know.
Yeah. How about Bluetooth and Wi-Fi? The settings or the options you get from the tiles are of very little value. So you don't see what your Wi-Fi network is until you press and hold on one of the icons.
Yeah, but you didn't get that before.
Right, but we should be able to. Okay, so now I go
you guys are
a level and... I can see my Wi-Fi network name.
Yeah, which is great. You didn't get that before.
But I still can't do anything else. So why can't I press and hold on my Wi-Fi icon and select a new network?
You guys are jaded.
Oh, I know another one. HomeKit.
What about?
Really a giant pain in the butt.
It's been changed.
HomeKit is kind of... janky the way it's working for me in 11.
I like the new sliders for audio and the sliders for brightness. I think those are cool. I like that you get the Apple TV remote widget right in there. That is nice, freaking cool.
I like that I can do screen recording widget.
Yeah.
I mean, I get why it was done. It's just. I think in general, what I'm taking issue with is like they keep making the devices and access to things more and more and more complicated. There's a desimplification of the entire user interface. And I think ultimately, especially for non-techies, like I can figure this stuff out, but you know, I'm going to hear nothing but endless stuff from my friends and family members who rely on me for like their iOS support because they're not going to know how to do like most of the stuff that they're used to being able to do.
I don't know if I agree with you, at least on the control center, because they surface the basic controls that really...
But there's no labels. There's nothing. Like, believe me, Michael, I mean, I've already heard from people. And again, okay. It's not the technical people that are willing to go to Google and look something up to try and figure out where did that thing go or how did that thing move. Or, I call it Apple has this obsession now with invisible interfaces. Like 3D touch is like the worst. When they bury stuff behind a 3D touch gesture, it's really confusing for people.
But see, the thing is, though, in most cases where 3D touch is a thing, it's kind of like the right-click context menu on your Mac.
Yeah, which is horrible from a UI standpoint, from a usability standpoint.
But it's more of a, who's not it's technical. A power user thing.
Exactly. Exactly. You are exactly, and I have a problem with that.
Okay.
They're adding layers of complexity in areas where they didn't need to make it more complex. Like it was working fine.
I think they're adding extra options to people who care to use,
which is a small percentage of their using public.
Right, but the thing is, it doesn't affect people who don't care for it.
All right, here's where it does affect people that don't care for it. And it's that Apple, I think right now, is taking an approach to interface design where if you already know what they've been doing, this seems like a natural evolution in some ways to what they've had before.
Right.
But it's like jumping into a soap opera mid-season. you don't have all the context leading up to the episode you're watching now, so you're just lost. And I think that's where a lot of Apple's interface is right now. They have forgotten that there's a lot of people that are jumping in mid-season.
You're talking...
I have clients and I have family members who just get angry when they have to upgrade. And they get even more angry because Apple's so forceful about upgrading when a new OS comes out. Like with constant alerts, constant pestering.
I've gotten no pestering.
I don't want to upgrade because I know everything's going to change and I'm not going to be able to use my device anymore.
Yeah. Well, it's been, Okay, so...
We all love it, you know, and again, I'm not trying to be Apple bash or anything like that. I'm just saying it is a change in how Apple's doing things. And there's some advantages, but there's also, I think, disadvantages that especially people in the tech community sort of forget about.
As far as the soap opera metaphor goes... Are you talking about people who have never had a phone or switching from a not smartphone? Or are you
talking about people that aren't familiar with Apple's interface for smartphones?
They're not previous iPhone users.
And I would say it goes even further.
Are you saying people who are switching from an Android, or are you saying people switching from a not smartphone?
I'm saying both. So people that have not had a smartphone before, people that are switching from an Android smartphone and are used to the Android way. But then I'm going to add in a third group, and it's the more casual users.
Correct.
that don't follow closely what Apple's doing with their interface. So these would be the people that watch a couple episodes a season, and they're just always lost.
Yeah, okay, so I've been playing a bit of devil's advocate because I do agree to an extent. It's tough because you want to... I mean, the control center is a great example of this problem, right? Because you want to add more functionality. You want to add a better way to encourage discoverability of advanced features. And yes, they do change. And Apple, we know, is okay with change all the time, forever, right? And which is why we get that. That's the reason we get something like Control Center. It's a dramatically different looking thing. And Correct. It has more ability to be customized by the power users. It adds more ability to control these things that we want, right? And I think in a lot of ways it is a bit simpler, but it is different. There is a lot more, touch and hold or / force touch stuff going on. Right. But I think that they're doing a pretty good job of striking a balance between discoverability and adding these extra features behind a force touch thing. I think they're doing a pretty decent job about
They also have a really hard job to accomplish.
It's extreme. It's the hardest thing. That's why so many UIs are terrible, is because it's not trivial.
Right. I mean, how do you take something incredibly complex and make it appear incredibly simple for someone?
Right.
That's like crazy hard to do. So, yeah, the fact that Apple has given us something where we can sit here and complain the way we do, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
It's not like we're complaining saying, holy crap, how can anyone even figure out how to turn this thing on? This is so complicated that you need to have a manual the size of War and Peace just to figure out how to use your phone.
And I think they're doing a pretty darn good job. Some of the glyphs, you know, the little wavy line thing is kind of confusing. I think they should make it a little speaker. But anyway, so that's nitpicky. What I was getting to when we started this conversation, and actually it ties in very well, is in Control Center, when you toggle your Bluetooth or Wi-Fi, it doesn't actually completely turn it off.
Right.
Which, if you consider the reason for doing so, I think that was a good decision.
Is this really new? Or this is not new, though, right? Didn't Apple say this is not new? It's always how it's been. It's just people didn't understand.
No. Okay, so listen for the reason and you'll know.
No, now. I know the reason.
Well, for the sake of the listener, the reason they do that is so when you turn off your Wi-Fi, instead of turning in Control Center, when you hit the little Wi-Fi toggle button in iOS 11, it doesn't fully turn off Wi-Fi, it just Correct. Disconnects you from all Wi-Fi networks. It stops searching for Wi-Fi, which is the primary battery drain. This is the searching for Wi-Fi part. But it allows certain things to continue working, such as
continuity,
Apple Pencil. So if you turn off Bluetooth, AirPods. Your Apple Pencil will still work. AirPods, I think, doesn't work. I'd have to check. Let me check that.
I'm not sure.
I know.
Apple Watch doesn't work.
Apple Watch disconnects? No, yep. I think Apple Watch continues to connect.
I'll do it right now. I'm pretty sure.
I think Apple Watch continues to connect.
That was one of the things.
Okay, but here's part of the problem.
Let me finish.
It's
so, and then AirDrop.
What does and doesn't work.
AirDrop. AirDrop stays on. So basically, it's these features. I think AirDrop is the perfect example of this, because it's like, I want to AirDrop a thing, and that feels like a discrete feature, especially given the fact that it is a discrete control in Control Center, right? Your AirDrop ability and your screen mirroring and all that kind of stuff, right? So it seems like it's a discrete feature, and it is presented as such. So why do I have to also have this other thing on? So I think it's a good decision. It was, again, this is another UI. It's like, it's trying to determine what the user really wants when they do this thing. So to be fair, you can turn off Wi-Fi radio in settings. So if you go to the settings app, you can turn it off. I'm completely fine with this change.
The way I described this to some people, oh, actually, I think it was on Daily Observations. It's like Apple made a Wi-Fi and Bluetooth firewall that blocks all services except its own.
Right. Here's the weird thing, guys. So I just tested what happens if I turn off the Bluetooth in Control Center. Mm-hmm. And immediately when I did, it said disconnected from my Apple Watch. Yet, as near as I can tell, my Apple Watch is still connected.
Whoopsie. Are you still connected? Can you like try?
Yeah, like when I swipe up the Control Center in Apple Watch, I still have the little green phone connected icon up in the upper left.
Is Wi-Fi still on?
No, I turned off both on in Control Center.
Okay, try pinging your phone from your watch.
What?
Try pinging your phone from your watch. You know what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's probably a UI bug,
but it's definitely the minute I press the Bluetooth icon right at the top of the Control Center, it says disconnected from Adam's Apple Watch.
Yeah. Okay. Well, they'll fix that. Maybe bug report. Too bad I can't audibly just say hashtag bug report and then they capture it. That'd be a good feature. Okay. So yeah, interesting conversation. I like it. So we talked about Control Center ultimately, I like that you can customize it, and I like it. I'm into the new control center.
Overall, I think it's better. But
you know, can I say one other thing about the those toggles?
Go.
Did you read the Tech Info article about all the ways that it will reconnect to those services?
No.
My favorite one is that apparently if you turn those off at 5 a.m. the next day, they will come back on.
They just turn back on.
Interesting.
I don't know why that is, but yeah.
That I am going to bet money that that is based on user analysis.
Mm-hmm.
I'm fine. You know what? I think this is going to be this is a non-story. This is something that we're talking about.
No, it's not
about.
A big deal. It's not a big deal.
I think honestly, it's a bigger thing. It's one of those things. It adds another layer of transparency to how we use our stuff. I think, especially the auto turn back on deal. Is because absolutely I turn off my Wi-Fi because I'm like, this is gonna jack up my whatever situation I'm in. Like, I don't know. Like,
it will also come back on. The Wi-Fi thing will also come back on if you go to another area. So if you move to a place where it detects a new known Wi-Fi network, it'll come back on and still connect to that known Wi-Fi network, I believe.
I think this is kind of based on user analysis. And again, I think, you know what? I have turned off. I often turn off my Wi-Fi. Typically, it's because I know I'm listening to some Apple Music stream, a previously recorded Apple Music. Have you noticed this? Beats One. So if you're listening to a recorded radio show,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of times if you walk away from your Wi-Fi base station, when the disconnection thing will trigger it to just shut off and you lose.
You're talking about this is the handoff between Wi-Fi cellular and Wi-Fi.
Going from cellular to Wi-Fi works fine. Right. Wi-Fi to cellular a lot of times will just kill the whole show.
Oh, it'll do it to podcasts. It'll do it to anything. Yeah, like the handoff, as much as Apple likes to say they've worked on making that seamless.
It's such garbage.
Yeah,
so it's not seamless. a lot of times if I'm listening to a Beats One show and I'm leaving my house, I turn off Wi-Fi because when you do it manually, it works just fine. Yep. But honestly, I only do that to avoid that problem. And I think that people turn off Wi-Fi typically to just avoid dumb problems. But at some point, usually, I would say every single day, there's a point where I'm like, why am I not on Wi-Fi? I should be on Wi-Fi. Right. I think that this feature is going to actually be a great addition. Now,
I don't know that any of this is new. Is this new to iOS 11, or was this happening in 10 and people just didn't notice?
It's new. I'd like to move on, though. I'm going to rattle off a couple more iOS 11 features that I really like. Maybe you guys have a couple more that you like, and we can throw those out there, and then we'll move on to other things. So there is a feature for people who are paranoid that Craig Federighi actually mentioned. So we know that you can be compelled by the police to, if you have Touch ID, put down your finger, right? To unlock your phone. Correct, Jeff?
Correct.
Jeff? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So when we were discussing the whole Face ID thing, he mentioned, there's this gesture where if you squeeze your phone, it'll, you know, pressing the side button and the volume down, I think.
Basically if you bring up the power down your phone option.
Yeah. So on the iPhone 8 and X, the new gesture is side button and either of the volume buttons at the same time. So it's basically a squeeze of the side of the phone. It will bring up your emergency SOS thing. And if you keep holding it, it'll do the actual SOS deal. It also brings up your medical ID, which is cool. But this SOS triggering, even if you don't, you know, keep holding it down and it calls 911 or whatever, if you just bring up this interface, it kills the ability to biometrically log in. So you have to use your password to do that. On the 7, you you hold down. What is it on the 7 now? I lost track of it. What's the SOS? Is it just hold down the power button?
Let's see.
Lord.
Nope, that just gives me slide to power off.
It may be the squeeze for...
Oops. Okay, so I did power and volume down. Yeah.
It's the five rapid presses of the side.
That's right.
But don't do it. Tell people not to test it.
Yeah, I just did and volume down.
Because it'll start calling emergency services.
Oh, it actually does
that. And make a really loud noise.
It does it immediately? Or is there a count?
Yeah.
You're positive. You tried this?
Go for it. Try it.
It says, well, I don't have it updated. Rapidly click the sleep-wake button 5 times to quickly call emergency services.
It does a countdown, but like canceling it is really difficult, and it makes a really, really loud noise. Like it starts beeping really loudly.
Like this thing?
Full volume. Try it. Go for it.
Whoop. On my Apple Watch. That? Is that what you're talking about?
Yep. But now it's going to call emergency services unless you cancel it.
No, on the watch, you have to keep holding it down. So...
Really?
If the police show up at your door...
I'll tell them that I know Jeff.
Yeah.
Emergency SOS is enabled by default, and there's only one step to activate it. Press the sleep-wake button on the side of your phone 5 times in rapid succession.
Okay, now see, here's the problem. Because we have all of these what Adam is calling the
gestures.
Gestures. So how many times do I press the power button to do one thing versus another? Which volume button do I need to hold when I'm doing specific presses with buttons? I mean,
I agree on that front. That just drives me crazy. But we've beat it to death. Let's continue.
I've also, on the Apple Watch thing, I've had many people who have accidentally called emergency services. I'd be really curious to know if that's become a problem, because I've had at least 3 people say, yeah, suddenly my watch started making a noise. And it's because they were doing something and somehow the button got held in
like
long enough to activate that
feature.
Yeah,
see, did they actually call the police, though?
Yeah, it did. Yeah, 3 different people.
Okay, so I have definitely run into situations where I'm in a position that it's holding that button, but as soon as it goes boop, I go, oh, I'm doing that thing, and then I just adjust myself and I'm fine.
Yeah, because you know what the feature is.
That's true. Yeah, someone will be like, what the hell is that noise? And then they'll keep doing what they're doing because they're confused.
Mm-hmm. Well, they're just, I think it does a 3 countdown, right? It goes 3,
it's
2,
it's not enough
4,
time
1.
To realize that it's coming from your watch and also that you need to stop what you're doing. Yeah.
Right, and then you got to look at the watch and then you got to find the cancel button.
Well, let's get Craig on the phone. Let's get Craig Federighi on the phone, and we'll tell him that he needs to fix his shit.
I mean, obviously, my guess is that what they found is that the obvious advantages of that feature versus the few accidental, you know, times that it does that is worth.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so I have one more feature that I super like, and then maybe if you have any good things to say about iOS.
I love iOS 11.
The new Notes app.
Yes.
In iOS 11 has a document scanner built in. Well, it's actually, there are
really
quite a few things.
Too, from what I've been hearing.
Yeah, so it's got a document scanner built in. I have not used it. I should give it a try because I've been using Readle's document scanning app for a couple of years now, which is pretty darn good. It's probably not as good as the Readle.
I hear it's actually probably the best document scanner that you have.
Interesting.
Now here's the interesting thing. Look at the interface for Apple's document scanner, then go look at Readle's. Apple totally copied what Readle's doing.
Oh, really?
Like the icons are very similar. Even it's kind of funny.
Oh, that's funny. There's also that shortcut where you tap with your pencil on your iPad Pro and it brings up notes, which is cool. Wait, how do I add a? Scan documents. Cool. Yeah, you hit the little plus button, hit scan.
Yeah, I hear the auto skewing, your de-skewing is like spot on. Like, and it does some sort of document detection too, like paper detection or something, and auto adjusts all the. Again, I haven't used it yet. I've just had a few people email me and say this is the best document scanner.
Interesting. Yeah, I'll have to try it some more. Does it OCR the text?
That I don't try. I would assume it does.
I don't think it does. But it will OCR your handwriting.
Which is pretty cool.
In the Notes app, yeah. Yeah, that is really cool. So, yeah, Notes app. Any, you guys have any favorite features you want to say?
I'm really liking on the iPad just the whole integration thing with drag and drop and split screen view and the Files app.
Yep.
It's taking my iPad Pro from excuse me, what was already a very capable alternative for working on whatever I need to do, and turned it into something that is so much closer to being a viable replacement for my laptop in many situations.
Yeah, the only thing with Files app is I wish there was an actual local storage ability. You have to, if you want to store the, like, quote, on my iPad or whatever, you have to put it in a folder for an app that already exists. So right now that...
Oh, you can't make a new folder?
No. So everybody's like, oh, it's a full file system. It's not.
No, I know it's not Michael? A full file system.
Yeah.
What? You don't have the on my iPhone or on my iPad location?
I do have that, but you can't...
Oh, you're right. There's not an option to make a new directory in on my iPad.
You can't do that, and you can't just arbitrarily dump files in apps to that location. You have to put it within a folder.
Interesting. So in my case, I hadn't even noticed that, but in my case, that means I have an Omni Outliner folder, and that's it.
That's me. Yeah. So I have OmniFocus, and so I can.
So the app has to support it, basically.
Yeah. But then you can arbitrarily dump whatever you want into that folder. So I'm kind of using my OmniFocus folder as the root directory.
Well, that's a little bit weird.
Yeah. I think people kind of jumped the gun on this whole
thing. That seems like a perfect opportunity for an app.
I know. I'm sure there's already an app that does that for you.
It's like iOS folder creator or something.
Folder app. It's a folder. There you go.
All it does is you press it and it makes a folder on my iPhone. That's the whole purpose of the app.
Well, it can only, I would guess, only make one for itself.
Right.
But yeah, I would dig that.
It's just called folder.
It's called folder. Shit. All right, TM. TM, we're making this. Nobody steal this idea. This is ours.
Okay.
It's a dollar.
Folder. So I have two features that kind of go together that I'm loving on iOS 11. Do not disturb while driving.
Cool. Yes.
It's freaking awesome. I know a lot of people hate it.
Does it have do you have it set up to send a message to people when they text you?
Yeah.
Adam is driving right now.
Yep.
Yeah. Yep. You can do the custom message.
But what goes hand in hand with that is, I think, improvements to Siri, and more specifically, the navigation improvements in the Maps app.
Oh yeah, lane
with the lane assist.
Nice. That's going to be so nice in LA.
Oh, it's freaking awesome because I've already been driving up there and I was using it. I had to go up to Long Beach for something. And
awesome.
It was fabulous. And the reason is, I think, combined with Do Not Disturb While Driving, Siri is now much more vocal about all of the navigation instructions that are being delivered, including like when. You know, in the past, like if you had an alternate route because of traffic, it would just say alternate route available or something like that. And then it would pop up something on the screen. She now actually tells you what the alternate route is, where it is, where the exit is.
And how much time you save.
Yeah.
Does it?
All with voice, which is the way it always should have been.
That is good. Now, does it say alternate route available? Please press this button to accept, or it's already accepted?
I believe you can accept it with a voice command. I don't remember.
Do you have?
I didn't take the alternate route.
Oh, so it's an option. It says, "Hey, this is available. Do you want to?" It doesn't automatically do it. Okay, that's always been kind of ambiguous. I know with Waze, it just does it for you.
She now vocally tells you when an exit is coming up. Although she's very pushy about it.
Hey, Dingus,
No, it's like, exit now, exit now.
That's good. Yeah. It's good. It's so good. I need that.
It's better if you have the watch as well. Because you get the notification on your wrist before it becomes necessary for Siri to jump in the middle of your ass and tell you you have to change lanes now.
It doesn't tell you, though. It doesn't know which lane you're in. It doesn't try to predict that, I'm guessing. It just tells you be in this
one. But she'll tell you, you know, this is coming up. You need to be in the two left lanes or, you know, get in the far left lane or whatever it might be.
That's great. Cool.
Yeah, which is awesome. The only bad part about the alternate route thing, and I'll just bring this up too. So I got stuck in traffic. I didn't want to take the alternate route. And there was a big accident and we were going really slow. She kept telling me over and over, like every 30 seconds, alternate route available, alternate route available. It's like, shut up.
And you can't cancel it.
Well, again, and do not disturb while driving's on. So there's no, I mean, I could have tapped the screen and said, I'm not driving and probably figured out a way to cancel it, but I don't know if it would have come back on. I mean, other than turning off the navigation.
Okay.
And it was just because I was going so slow. I kept reapproaching the exit, you know, where she was wanting me to go.
Okay, cool. All right. So
that was awesome.
Other releases, Apple put out TV OS 11 with, I feel like everybody keeps missing the best feature of this. So, you know, you've got your home screen syncing, which nobody's going to use because who has more than one Apple TV except for crazy people?
Many people.
Okay. I believe it.
I don't.
Yeah. You're crazy.
I only have one TV in my house.
You'd think that you'd have more. Actually, I did, to
be
fair.
Crazy.
I did, to be fair, a couple years ago, I did have two Apple TVs when I had, yeah, okay, fair. Auto dark mode, which is nice, I suppose. I should try that. I should try turning that on because I have it just dark. There's 4K support for the new Apple TV, and the feature that Michael cares about is AirPod support.
And
the old OS, I used AirPods,
but you had to pair it manually, and it was a pain.
So now you put your AirPods in, and your Apple TV is just like, oh, I'll play to that.
Well, you have to select it, but yeah.
Oh, okay. So it's not totally transparent, but you never have to pair them; they're just automatically paired.
Yeah. So now here's a fun feature that I accidentally discovered, and I think it's new in this operating system, but if you're on the home screen and you press and hold the play pause button, it will bring up an audio routing menu.
Cool. Ah.
Which is very nice, and I think probably more reliable than doing it in other apps, because I have stupid apps such as the MLB app, which is kind of garbage, that doesn't let you choose audio routing. So that's a good tip.
Here's a cool new feature it seems like a minor thing, but it's kind of neat. One of my listeners told me about. So, you know, you're watching a movie or a TV show, and if you tap the little touch area on the remote, it brings up the much time has elapsed and then how much time is remaining, right?
Yes, I love this feature.
So if you tap again, it displays on the left the current time and then the time that the actual show will finish.
Yeah, your personal time. So if it's a half hour show, it'll be like you started at noon and it'll say you're done at 12:30.
Correct.
Which is awesome. That's great. That's a great, great feature. I like it. Apple released watchOS 4, of course, which it's got new watch faces with the Siri watch face. Oh shoot, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to talk to you. Improvements to that person I just mentioned. Gym equipment integration. So a couple of features I like, maybe you've got more. There's the new dock layout, which I think is really cool. So you sweat, you get the tiles, you know, it flips through kind of more like albums, which is, I think that's a much better way. It will do the heart rate, the average heart rate thing in the background, in addition to the you're not doing any activity and your heart rate's...
Something to know about that if you have a Series 0 that's not supported.
Yes. If you have Series 1 or later. And there's a flashlight, which I think is kind of a good feature. I haven't used it. It's probably not going to be that great, but...
Well, there's one feature on there that I think you would appreciate, Michael, which is the red flashlight, right?
Ooh. Yeah.
So if you're doing stargazing, you know, so you don't mess up the your adjustment to low light, right? So
yeah.
A lot of astronomy people use red flashlights. The only bummer is it's not sticky.
Oh, it's not?
So you have to turn on the regular light and then you do force touch on
you
it?
You have to swipe over to the red. So hopefully they fix that. Because it kind of defeats the purpose, because the whole point of having a red flashlight is it's not going to ruin your eyes being adjusted to like low light or darkness.
Oh, yeah. But
they got to make it sticky for it to really be of use to astronomy sense. People, which is the whole point of having a red flashlight. So.
Yeah. Okay, cool.
They're almost there. They almost made it.
So close.
Any other watch improvements you guys like?
The Toy Story face is fun.
Okay. I also haven't updated my watch because it screws up the ability to control the music on your phone. Oh,
I know the other thing we should mention that is not fun but can be fixed, at least for a lot of people, the now playing coming up automatically any time that you start playing music or a podcast or anything that has a player.
Yeah,
it automatically switches to the now playing face. So when you raise your wrist, you get the now playing and not your standard watch face.
Hmm.
Which is really annoying.
Is that a watch face?
No, it's just you get the now playing interface and it's constantly up. And even if you press, so then you can press the digital crown to go back to your standard watch face. But then the next time you raise your wrist, it's going to be, if you're still playing music or a podcast, it's going to show you the now playing interface.
Okay.
But that can be turned off in the watch. It's kind of buried. Let me find it for you guys. But if you go into the Apple Watch app on your phone, I think it's in general. Wake screen, and it's the auto launch audio apps toggle.
I just shut the crap off out of that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, because you can still bring up the now playing, you know, from the app switcher. You can keep it in there as, you know, one of your favorites and just go to it manually if you want to get that. But yeah. So that threw a lot of people off because it just automatically started showing up. And it's like, no, I just want to see my time and my complications. I get that the music is playing, but if I want to interact with the music or jump ahead, I'll bring up the player myself.
Cool.
So it's just an option. I mean, some people might like the feature, but it's just on by default in watchOS 4, and it confused a lot of people at first. So that's how you disable it if you don't like that feature.
Nice. Cool. All right, so I'm going to include a link to 9to5Mac 50 plus new features watchOS 4 because I think a lot of the hasn't gotten a lot of recognition. So there's that. Now on to iPhone 10. iPhone 10. I don't know. I jump down people's throats. Not actually at them when that happens, and I do it myself. iPhone 10. So it looks like the production is going slower than expected, according to DigiTimes. They put out a report citing unnamed sources, claiming that suppliers are now shipping only about 40% of the components originally planned for the initial production of the iPhone X. And I believe it's from Ming-Chi Kuo.
Right.
He says that the true depth camera is likely the bottleneck.
Yeah. I think that's a safe assumption, considering it's like, what, six different components?
Yeah, and it's a totally new build, and yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, because it's got the, I think a lot of it is probably the structured light system. That's got to be
Romeo and Juliet.
Yeah, that's the code name.
Yeah. They don't have enough. Now I can't remember which is which.
Romeo's or Juliet's?
Yeah, it's one or the other.
Does this mean that the parts are eventually going to kill themselves and realize too late they didn't have to?
I believe it's
spoilers.
It's the Juliet module, which is the one that's the 30,000 points of light.
I think it's the infrared light system. That would make sense to me because it's
the projector, the dot projector.
The dot projector module needs to be very precise.
So I believe that's the one they're calling Juliet, and the Romeo is the IR receiver, which is fine.
Yeah.
And I'm sure no one at Apple has missed the irony that that no one wanted Romeo and Juliet to be together. I'm sorry, spoilers.
Yeah, don't do that.
Is it still too early for Shakespeare spoilers?
I don't know. I'd have to check. Yeah, so iPhone X gonna be, as we all know, it's going to be kind of hard to come by for a bit.
Well, there's some other rumors surrounding this. Some are reporting that a little bit of this is by design, that Apple has told suppliers to kind of slow down a little bit because they wanted to see how iPhone 8 and 8 Plus sales were going. And there's even a rumor that they're looking to see, they want to have enough to kind of have decent supplies for the pre-orders of iPhone X, but they don't want to overproduce. So they're going to also be looking and analyzing how many iPhone X pre-orders they get. And then they're going to have the suppliers ramp up very quickly to kind of meet demand. So I think a lot of what's going on, while it's being read by the media that there's actual production issues, I think some of the things are also Apple trying to very tightly control supply chain, and recognizing that, you know, if they have shortages, it, at least initially for them, it really isn't a detriment to sales. It's like people aren't going to stop ordering the iPhone X because they have to wait 3 weeks, right? They're still going to get the orders. So if they can ramp up and fulfill those orders more quickly, you know, their typical, under promise, over deliver, then that's better for them. And yeah, also it just saves them money on the supply chain if they're not overproducing iPhone X.
Yeah.
Right. They don't want stuff sitting in warehouses. They want everything just in time. They want to be only delivering the units that they have demand for. And unfortunately for the consumer, that means a lot of us are going to be waiting longer than we would like to get our iPhone X. But from Apple's perspective, it's just good business.
Yep.
On all accounts, right? Because if it sells out really quickly, they get a lot of great media press and everybody thinks the iPhone X's a huge hit. There's so much demand for it that Apple can't meet supply. You know, it's a better situation than the reverse, where they've overproduced iPhone X's and they've got stuff sitting in supply chain on ships and warehouses and stuff like that, costing them money.
Let's see. This is an interesting story. We talked about the FCC wanting, or particular individuals encouraging Apple to enable the FM radio chip in the iPhones. So the FCC has put out a statement. I believe it's the chairman of the FCC put out a statement saying that, you know, given the recent storms, it would improve public safety if the FM radios were activated in iPhones. So Apple, why don't you just do it? Just do it. and Apple put out a statement saying, we do care about that, but we can't do that thing you're saying because it's wrong. You're misinformed.
Right.
There are no, it says, iPhone 7 and iPhone 8 models do not have FM radio chips in them, nor do they have antennas designed to support FM signals. So it's not possible to enable FM reception. And
there's no possible way the FCC could have known the full technical details of the radios that are inside iPhones.
Right. This was basically them assuming...
Because Apple isn't required by law to submit full documentation for every radio signal that an iPhone can send out or receive.
Yeah, this was...
To the FCC.
This is based on, is it the cellular modem?
Right? Yeah.
So
yeah.
The cellular modems sold by, I believe, Qualcomm have the capability to do FM.
The older ones that Apple used pre-iPhone 7, yes, I believe.
Okay, so that's why they specifically called out the 7 and 8.
Right, but even in the earlier ones...
They didn't have the antennas.
I believe the chips that Apple used, there's no antennas, and they're not...
Right.
Like, they couldn't just even be enabled even in, like, a 6S or a 6 or anything like that, because there's just no... There's no capability for it to actually receive an FM signal.
Yeah.
That makes sense. So, yes, those chips technically have support for it, but it's not hooked up to the hardware in any way in an iPhone. So it's not just like enable it in software and it suddenly starts working.
This is a really goofy thing for the FCC to say.
Yeah, exactly. Well, again, because they have the, like, this got reported by a local newspaper, I think originally in Florida. And the FCC, before he made that statement, I mean, it would have been fairly easy for him to ask somebody to fact check.
Now,
the story.
When has anyone in the current administration worried about fact checking?
So, yeah, he ended up looking bad and he didn't have to, but oh well. I mean, the public perception has always been that there were FM radio chips in there, which again, with older phones, there are. And everybody always assumed Apple just had disabled it in software. But, I mean, if you're going to go out publicly and make a statement like that, you're going to want to make sure that that is, you know, a reality. And again, the FCC has all the documentation to really know.
Yeah, they could have just looked at their own files.
Yeah.
Let's see here. Apple Watch support in... What is it? Oh, I think we knew this. Didn't we know that only the Series 3 was going to work with the AirPower mat?
Yes, we did know that.
Correct. Yes.
So why is this a story again?
Because people don't pay attention.
The good news about that, too, though, is that the Series 3 also then works with some other Qi-compatible chargers.
Yes. Now, is the Google Pixel compatible with Qi? I don't think it is.
That I don't know.
Okay.
I don't. The Pixel's not being announced. The new one, at least, is not being announced until October 4th.
I'm talking about the current one.
That I don't know.
Okay.
Not up on my Google Pixels. Sorry.
That's fair. Yeah. So we knew this. It's kind of a bummer. We knew that the Apple Watch charger is based on Qi.
Mm-hmm.
But for whatever reason, the previous models just don't support it.
Well, yeah, I think because they're extending the spec and the hardware to work with the AirPower mat so that you can do three devices at once. I don't know that there's any other Qi chargers that are more than one charger per device. I could be wrong on that, but I think you at least need to have multiple like broadcaster, I don't know what you call the things that actually send out the signal.
The inductors,
coils. Yeah.
Yeah, you would need multiple coils.
Yeah.
For sure.
But then I'm sure there's interference things. Like, I'm sure there's a lot of things that have to be tweaked to get that to work. And I think Apple, what I've read is that Apple has done some sort of proprietary extension to the spec to get the air power mat to work.
Interesting.
That makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, it makes total sense. And the question is Apple going to share that, because they are part of the consortium, so are they going to share that back to the consortium? Now, they're under no obligation to do it, obviously. I'm going to guess that they're not going to do it, but there's a lot of people, obviously, who are into the whole wireless charging stuff that are really hoping that Apple will,
mm-hmm.
you know, give that source back to the consortium.
Yeah.
It's totally not what Apple does. So I would imagine the only way you're going to be able to multi-charge Apple devices is going to be by buying Apple's charger.
Yeah, I would guess.
All right.
At least initially. I mean, which makes sense.
Yep. Okay. With that, let's do our picks. And Jeff, I will let you go first.
All right. So my pick, and if you tell me I've picked this already, that's okay, because I have another pick that I was debating between this week. It's Cosmo, which is a little robot from Anki, which is the company that made the or makes the race car things, you know, that you control with your iPhone.
Yeah.
So
Overdrive, yeah.
The Anki Overdrive. So they have this little robot that it looks sort of like a little bulldozer that'll fit in the palm of your hand, and you can control it with an app on your iPhone or iPad. You can program it, and it interacts with you. It'll do basic facial recognition. So it'll learn your face, and sometimes it'll get excited when it sees you. Like for me, it goes, "Oh, Jeff," sort of thing. It sounds sort of like Wall-E talking.
Mm-hmm.
And it's programmable, and you can do like what a lot of people think of as command line style programming, and then they also have a graphic coding interface that you can use as well, and you can play games with it, and it's this like crazy cool little thing. So the one that I'm playing with, it's the new model that's all silver, and I forgot what that one's called.
The limited edition, I think.
Yeah,
something like that. Special edition.
Yeah, I think it's Cosmo Special Edition. But this thing is really cool, and I've been having a lot of fun playing with it and doing coding with it, and it comes with these little blocks that you can use with games, and it's something it can interact with. And anyhow, it's just this really cool educational coding learning environment. And since you can do all your own coding for it, you can make it more than just an educational tool. Like I've seen people or videos of people that have written sort of like a automated home monitoring thing where the robot can roll around, and if it sees a face it doesn't recognize, it sends you an alert. So anyhow, yeah, it's very cool.
It's got a very advanced artificial intelligence inside of it too, which is kind of one of the key features of it.
Yes, and the facial recognition thing, I asked them about how that data is stored, and they said it's all local. No facial data is ever transmitted off of the device itself. So that made me feel better about that.
That thing is crazy. That's crazy.
And I'll tell you, if you want, because my daughter has one and we love it. It's pretty amazing. So a lot of the things you're mentioning, Jeff, are just the base level apps and stuff that are available. If you go to their website, there is you can basically unlock it and get a full SDK. And my daughter did this for a school project. You can completely control and program Anki with Python code. So you could write your own games for it. You can go full out low level coding if you want.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
That'll be the next thing for me with this. and I also have the little carrying case they make for it.
Yeah, that thing looks cool.
It's totally worth having because it's padded and it has little spaces for each component. And that the only thing that I'm disappointed with out of this is that it doesn't actually come with a wall charger unit. It charges over USB. So you can plug it into whatever you want, but if you're going to just take it around somewhere where you're not going to have your computer with you to plug it into, grab a USB wall charger and throw it in the container, in the little package, which it actually has a spot to hold that. They don't include one. So anyhow.
So yours didn't come with a wall charger?
No wall charger.
Huh. Wonder if that's a change, because my daughter's has one.
I bet it's a change because I mean, I went back through the packaging and looked at the instructions, and it says works with any wall charger or with most wall chargers you provide.
I'll have to go double check, but I'm pretty sure we got a little wall wart thing with a USB, you know, port on it. I don't think we're using one of our own, but don't quote me on that.
Yeah,
and but she had the very original. She got the she pre-ordered it and got the very first one that came out.
Yeah, and this is definitely not pre-order because this is the, you know, the special edition model, and you've been able to buy a Cosmo for what, like a year?
Right. What I would recommend, probably in the travel case, is just like an Anker battery or something like that.
Oh yeah, that'd be perfect.
Yeah.
Anyhow, it's cool, and it costs, I want to say, what, $150? Am I getting
there?
That right?
I believe $180.
$180.
Which sounds like a lot, but I mean, again, this is way more than a toy. I mean, it looks like a toy and it's fun like a toy, but there's a lot of stuff you can do with this, especially again when you open it up with the SDK. And what's cool about it is you can start out very simply, you know, with a younger child, and then as they get older, they can do more and more with it. And as their skills, you know, improve, they can do more and more with it. So,
yeah, it's very cool.
Okay. Adam, pick.
My pick is something I haven't had a ton of time to play with it. It's got a little bit of controversy behind it, but it is a video app, and it is called Video Leap from Nlyte. And it is a full-featured I forget how you say it. It's, you know, basically you can edit together multiple video clips. You can add text. You can add audio. It's like a very much pro version of iMovie because it has filters. It has adjustments. You can even do chroma keying on it. It has all kinds of effects. And I'm just playing around with the free version now. I think it does have some limitations.
Is it one word?
I don't know what they are. Again, this recently came out, and I've only been playing with it for a couple days now. But I think it may become one of my favorite editors.
Why is this free?
Huh? Well, it's not technically free. Again, I think there's limits. I think there's a limit to the number of video tracks that you can edit. With the free version, it is then available either with a subscription that you get through in-app purchase. I think it starts at $4 a month or $20 a year. And if you're totally subscription adverse, you can pay $40 and get the entire app unlocked.
But you know, for a lot of people, you won't need to pay. You'll have everything you need in that free version.
That's right. Cool. You know what the limits of the free version are? I couldn't find those on the website. That's what I was trying to figure out.
You know, I haven't looked that deep.
There's definitely some of the filters and effects are pro only filters, and it'll tell you that, but there's only a couple of them. I mean, there's not a lot, but I thought there was some other limit, like in terms of either the video export quality, like, you know, I don't know. I can't find those on the website. So maybe I'm wrong. Maybe there are no limits in the free version beyond just getting access to some of the extra pro filters.
Hmm.
But regardless, I mean, what I like about it is the user interface, I think, is very easy to figure out. You sort of add a filter and effect, and then you have nice large touch points for controlling the ins and out points of those effects. You can also lay down markers to trigger certain effects to come on, off, or on. You can do pretty advanced compositing of video with effects and things like that. And it just, I think what put this over the top for me is the UI, because there are some other pretty good iOS video editors out there, but especially on the phone. I haven't been playing with it on my iPad. I know there's another really popular pro video app for the iPad, and I'm blanking on the name of it right now. But this one, at least on the phone, for me, seems like it's much easier to composite something really cool than I can do currently with iMovie. And I'm a big iMovie fan on the iPhone. I like it a lot. So it's called Video Leap from Nlyte. Not Nlyte. The name of the company?
Yeah, it is.
Is that right?
Yeah.
I think that's it.
Light Tricks.
Light Tricks. Thank you.
And
light,
ah, okay.
Enlight Video Leap. Yeah. Okay. That's
so fair. Yeah. And Enlight is the, and these are the same. This is the same developer that made Facetune. So if you're familiar with that app, same developers.
All right. Okay. So my pick is, it's called GoodNotes, and it's awesome. So this is how I'm taking notes on my iPad, in class. And to be fair, this is only a week, but so at, when I got the iPad Pro, I thought I probably am not going to get enough functionality out of the notes, the built-in notes app, even in iOS 11. Would you agree with that?
For what you need, the notes app is too limited.
Okay. Does it? Is it because of why?
It's because what you want is something that gives you more control over what you're doing with your notes, gives you better organization.
Okay.
And yeah,
I think organization is probably the biggest one.
Are there no folders in notes?
It doesn't. It's. I don't think it's as robust at organizing.
Okay, fair.
But I think you can do. Hold on, let me look. I never use the Notes app because it's always been just too.
There's a stigma
limited for me.
There's a stigma against the Notes app because it's included. Oh yeah.
So yes, you can make notes. Folders in the Notes app, but just overall, I think that GoodNotes, and some of the other comparable note-taking apps are more robust than Apple's own Notes app.
Well, you know, like for example, I know one thing
school and work.
The Notes app doesn't have is like the concept of pages, right? Everything has to be just one giant scrolling.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Scrolling note.
Oh, that's a little weird.
Yeah. Right? You don't have a multi, it's not like a, you know, like you have a notebook
and
which a lot of the other note apps kind of have that concept of like.
Can you bring in a PDF?
Yes.
Can you store, so you can store PDFs in the notes folders?
You can store them in a note.
Ah, okay.
Inside the note, yeah.
And then you can also put a video or an image into a note.
Okay, so we've found where it breaks down for me. So what I wanted was something that would let me organize my notes. I have handwritten notes, of course, with my Apple Pencil. I write on PDFs a lot, and I don't want to insert them in a sprawling note. I want to just have the PDF and then just annotate it, right? And right. I kind of want
to. You can do in notes, but you're in a separate interface kind of thing. Yeah.
Yeah. So I want it to be a one-stop shop where this is like my master binder that has all, you know, PDFs and I can insert. So I can have separate PDFs that are like handouts and then other PDFs that are part of my note-taking. And so that limited that down to a couple apps. The ones I considered first was Notability, because I had it. It's been around forever. And the big deal with Notability is that it records audio for you, and so you can actually play back the audio, and it will show you what you wrote at that point during the audio, which is cool. Right. And then you can do the reverse where you can say what was being said when I wrote this. Also pretty cool. Not super important to me. I like the feature and I would probably use it, but the more interesting feature to me was the ability to search handwritten notes. That was huge. And because and I didn't like some other things about the Notability user interface. It frustrated me very quickly. So I went looking for something else. And when I found GoodNotes, GoodNotes sold me pretty quickly with the fact that the handwritten notes are recognized as text. And it's really good at it. The only thing it's not good at is math formulas, stuff with like subscripts and superscripts. But I'd have to play with the... the notes app to see if it does a better job at math, but I never search for math because nothing ever gets it right. If I could search for a formula, it'd be pretty cool, but typically searching for the title, that's going to get me where I need to go. And it adds the flexibility of being able to, I mean, in classic notebooks, I do things kind of aspirationally, occasionally, that never work out, such as, you know, tagging a page like, oh, I need to talk to the professor about this, or kind of adding a context. So doing like hashtags and at symbols, you know, it obviously doesn't really work that well for handwritten notes because you can't search it. Yeah, you can flip through the pages and look for it if you put it in the right spot, but it doesn't work super well. So with this ability, it kind of opens you up to a whole new world of taking notes. So you can very easily, so the way I have it set up is I have a notes notebook. You can create as many notebooks as you want, and then you put those notebooks within categories. So I have a category for each class, and then I have, you know, everything related to that. So I've got the notebook, I've got handouts, I've got homework, I've got, you know, scratch paper and all that. And I've completely eliminated paper from my workflow.
Does it have a document 100%. Scanner in it?
It or does like, not.
So if you get a paper handout,
it does
are you
not.
Using a different...
It does not do that yet. But okay,
That's
them.
What you're using the Readle app for currently?
Yeah. So currently, just in my classes, all handouts are also provided as PDFs.
Oh, okay. So that makes it easier.
So far. But the occasional thing that I want to scan in, I do pull in with Readle's Scanner Pro, I think it's called.
Yeah.
And I love Scanner Pro. So, you know, and that'll actually OCR the text. So it does not, as far as I know, GoodNotes will not OCR text. I think they're probably going to add that. So, I tweeted at them and they said they're adding in document scanning. And I would bet they're going to include OCR in that.
I would hope so.
And
by OCR, you mean doing handwriting to text, right?
Typed text. You know, if you, I mean, that, yeah, what I'm talking about is typed text on a page that you scan in with the camera.
Okay.
OCR that. Of course, it supports regular PDF searching as well. So, it's $8 and totally worth it. The UI isn't super flashy, but it gets the job done. And
cool.
I really like it. It's, you know, in addition to just GoodNotes being really good and working well, just the reception of the iPad Pro to me personally, and also, you know, to my homies that I sit next to, and they're like, oh, you got the new thing. Let me try it with the pencil. And they're always like, oh, but when I put my hand down, it's not going to work. And like, no, it doesn't. And as soon as someone starts writing with the iPad Pro, especially, I think a lot of this has to do with the ProMotion, the new refresh rate. They're just blown away. Everybody's blown away when they see this thing. Even the people who are skeptical saying like, oh, don't buy that, that's too much money. They write with it and they're like, okay, wow, that's pretty cool. So I love this. It's probably, so the iPad Pro, probably in the last couple of years, my favorite Apple purchase. Like it blew everything out of the water. Like this is bringing my productivity to a new echelon, and it's really cool because it's an iPad, and for me an iPad has always been a content consumption device, and now it is an epic productivity tool.
Welcome to the party, awesome. Mike.
Yeah, welcome. Yeah. You're like, we knew this already. The other cool thing that I like about GoodNotes, in Notability, I tried drawing shapes and I couldn't for the life of me figure out how to do it. Jeff pointed out to me how to do it, and I don't like the way it works because you have to bring up a different interface.
Mm-hmm.
The one thing I do like about GoodNotes is that you can annotate an image separately. That's pretty cool. But in GoodNotes, you can, you just, without changing context at all, there's no modal change. You can draw perfect shapes, by, I th- you tap on the shape changer button, and then you draw whatever shape it is. So whether it's a square, a rectangle, something, you can draw like trapezoids. I'm sure you can do other things. So it basically senses like, oh, you're trying to draw straight lines. I'm going to straighten those for you. You can draw perfect circles, of course, but my favorite is ellipses, because I'm taking an orbits class and I'm going to be drawing a lot of ellipses. Mm-hmm. So you just draw your ellipse and it's like, okay, you want an ellipse? Go for it. Cool. You got that. And it's good for drawing, you know, orthogonal, you know, coordinate, what am I thinking? The base, you know, X, Y, Z sort of thing. So, you know, you draw your lines and it'll actually, if you draw little arrows, it'll actually do your arrow nice and straight too. So I really like it. It works great. It's very fast. It's flexible. It only has one. I take that back. It has a pen. You can either do a fountain pen or a ballpoint pen style. I like the fountain pen because it makes my writing look better.
There you go.
Does Notability have other writing utensils beyond a pen and a highlighter? I don't.
You cut out on my end, so I totally missed the
question. I just asked if Notability has other writing utensils beyond a pen and a highlighter.
I think there's a couple different types of pens.
Okay, that's fair. We don't have to jump into that. A bunch of different paper. So on the GoodNotes side, a bunch of different paper options that I've barely even explored. I just saw that there's graph paper, and I said, sign me up. I don't care about other kinds of paper. lots of great export abilities. It's so cool. It's so awesome also being able to have everything you've written on my phone. So like I hadn't had it set up yesterday or the day before when someone said, hey, how did you figure out, you know, problem, whatever. And I'd said, oh, I'm at the store. I don't have access. But then when I got home, I turned on iCloud syncing. And now I have it on my phone wherever I go. It's so cool. If you're on the fence about getting an iPad Pro, get it. You're going to love it. So that's GoodNotes for, and of course the iPad Pro. So with that, you can find all of our picks in the show notes at theiosshow.com. Review the show on iTunes, give it some stars, tell a friend. If you have feedback for the show, feedback@theiosshow.com is the email address to which we would like your feedback. Advertising is handled by Backbeat Media at backbeatmedia.com. Adam Christensen is at the MattCast, MattCast.com, and at MattCast on Twitter. Thanks for being here, Adam, on a Saturday morning. Were you in your feety pajamas eating cereal at this point?
Yeah, I was having just coffee and a bagel.
Okay, gotcha. No, I bet, Jeff, do you have like a ducky onesie? Rubber ducky?
Yeah. I don't know what you're talking about.
Jeff Gamet's at the Mac Observer, MacObserver.com. Timo Daily Observations Podcast, and at Jay Gamet on Twitter. Thanks for being here, Jeff.
It's always awesome.
And I'm at Michael Johnston on Twitter. You can hit me up there, ask questions, and give us suggestions. I know we brought up a lot of stuff this show, so if you have comments on that, the Twitter is also a good way. There's also comments on the show episodes, which works well too. So if you want to put that in the context of the show, that works. With that, we'll see you next time on The iOS Show. An iPod. An iPod. An iPod. An iPod. An iPod. A phone. A phone. A phone. An iPod. An iPod. An iPod. An iPod. An iPod. A phone. A phone. A phone. And an internet. And an internet. Internet. How are we going to communicate this? The stylus. We don't want to carry around a mouse, right? So what are we going to do? So what are we going to do?